Random House Audio presents Lips Unsealed, a memoir by Belinda Carlisle. This is Belinda Carlisle. Introduction. Heaven is a place on earth. For much of my life, I felt like my fate was determined before I stepped into a recording studio, sang a song, or even thought about the Go-Go's, long before I ever joined Hollywood's punk scene in the mid-1970s. When I was 12 years old, I was a mixed-up, restless little girl living in Thousand Oaks, a working-class area in Los Angeles's West San Fernando Valley. My stepdad had a drinking problem. My mom was on the verge of a nervous breakdown, and I was teased as fat and stupid. I was neither, but at that age, the facts didn't matter. I hated my life and wanted something better. I came home one day from a friend's house holding a book that seemed like it might help me to change my life. I hid it under my sweatshirt and went straight to my bedroom. I felt a tingle of excitement as I slipped it out and looked at the cover, The Satanic Verses by Anton LaVey. I read bits and pieces, and although I understood very little of the author's rant against Christianity, I focused on terms like exorcism, evil, and black magic, thinking I could find out how to cast spells and take control of my life. This wasn't the first book I read on the subject, but it got me in the mood to finally try. I slid a box out from under my bed and removed the contents I had assembled earlier: brewed tea leaves, oak twigs, string, and a candle. I arranged them in front of me as I'd seen in a different book. I chanted some words and called on the invisible powers of the universe to give my life the excitement I felt it lacked and everything else I wanted. What did I want? I asked myself that question for most of my life. As a kid, I wanted out of my house, the place of much torment and trouble. The punk scene became my refuge, my safe haven, the forgiving, understanding world where I could be anything I wanted, in my case, a rock star. After I became a rock star, I still didn't know what I wanted. Finally, many years later, I began to realize I had been asking the wrong question. It was actually one night in 2005 when I finally came clean with myself, when I asked what it was I needed, not what I wanted. I had gone to London for business, but spent 3 straight days locked in my hotel room doing cocaine. I went on the biggest binge of my life, which is saying something considering I had used, boozed, and abused for 30 years. When I looked at my eyes in the mirror, I didn't see anyone looking back at me. The lights were out. I was gone. It scared me, yet I didn't stop until I had an extraordinarily frightening out-of-body experience where I saw myself overdosing and being found dead in the hotel room. I saw the whole thing happen, and I knew if I kept doing the coke, I was going to die. At that moment, I shut my eyes, and when I opened them again, I made the decision I had put off for way too long. I opened myself up to life. I appreciated the good, faced the bad, and began to find the things I needed. Now, 4.5 years later, the bad days are behind me but not forgotten. They made me who I am today, a far better, healthier, smarter, more open, and more loving person than I ever thought was possible. I'm someone who lived her dream against the odds of any of it happening, and yet I never doubted it. Who knows? Maybe it was the spells I cast back when I was a little girl. Whatever it was, it's been a pretty remarkable ride. I'm writing this book at age 50, a milestone that seems like the right time to look back, hopefully with some perspective, insight, and wisdom at my career, marriage, sobriety, and efforts to connect with a higher power. I don't know that people make entire albums anymore, but when I was growing up and early in my career with the Go-Go's, artists tried to put together a collection of songs that made sense as a whole. You listened cut by cut, hoping every song was great, but generally discovering some songs were better than others, some were great, and some were so bad they should have been left in the studio. At the end, there was some sort of aha moment when you got the work in its entirety. If it was any good, it stayed with you, made you think, and in the best of all worlds, it offered inspiration and hope. I feel that way about my life thus far. It may not be everyone's cup of tea, but most of the cuts have been pretty good, and some even great. They worked for me, a little girl who thought she cast a spell that created the rest of her life, and then turned into a woman who realized The real magic had been there the whole time. Chapter 1, I Think It's Me. At 18, I worked at the Hilton Hotel Corporation, photocopying papers for 8 hours a day. I was bored out of my mind. Making matters worse, I had the world's most hideous boss. He looked for reasons to call me into his office and chew me out. Most people would have quit, but I didn't care. Besides needing the money, I knew I wasn't going to be there for long. I was going to be a rock star. I was absolutely certain about it. I had always been like that, someone who dreamed big and believed those dreams could come true if I kept at them. I probably inherited that from my mom. Raised in Hollywood, Joanne Thompson was the eldest of two children of Roy, a plant manager at the General Motors facility in Van Nuys, and Ruth, a homemaker whose head-turning beauty and dramatic flair had inspired her as a younger woman to pursue movie stardom. Like her mom, my mother was drop-dead gorgeous. Photos of her as a senior at Hollywood High showed a redhead with a great figure and big, lively eyes. I think she could have had a shot at a career in front of the camera if she had had ambition in that direction. By her own admission, though, my mother was too naive and short-sighted. I didn't think about what I wanted to do, she once told me, adding that she thought everything would be or should be happy, happy, happy. Then I got married, she continued, and I found reality. Actually, she found Harold Carlyle, a James Dean lookalike, whom she'd met while still a high school student. He worked at a gas station near the school. Though he was 20 years older than her, she fell in love with him. They married right after she graduated, and on August 17, 1958, less than 9 months after she accepted her diploma, she gave birth to a baby girl, whom she named Belinda. I arrived in the world via C-section. According to my mom, I was too large for her to push out naturally. Apparently, size was an issue for me from day one. 2 years later, my mom gave birth to a boy, Butch, and 2 years after him, she had my sister Hope. Even now, she doesn't talk much about those early years. Barely out of her teens, she was juggling three small children in a cramped Hollywood apartment, making do without much money, and trying to figure out life with a much older man. When I was 5, we moved to Thousand Oaks, a 50-mile drive from our Hollywood apartment. It took us out of the city and into a fairly rural area of dairy farms and post-Korean War housing developments. Our neighborhood was the low end of working class, and we were among the poorest, though at my age, I didn't know rich from poor. We moved into a small pink and brown 1960s tract home at the end of a cul-de-sac. I thought it was beautiful. The backyard was a hardscrabble mix of grass and dirt, with a cheap metal swing set lodged in the middle that was like an island of fun. The problem was getting into it. My dad had a pet rooster who threatened us kids whenever we went back there. My dad had a similar temperament. Even on good days, there was always an undercurrent of tension in the house. Our move to Thousand Oaks coincided with my dad working at the GM plant in Van Nuys, though he didn't last there long before he started a carpet cleaning business. I remember my mom hand-painting a logo on the side of his van. It was like the christening of an ocean liner, because after that he spent most of the time on the road. As part of the change, my mom sought comfort and companionship with a handsome carpenter who lived across the street, Walt Kurcheski. Walt was at our house whenever my dad wasn't there, which is more often than not. I didn't question the arrangement until one afternoon when I was waiting in front of my house to ride bikes with my friend Eddie. He walked up to me looking uncomfortable and announced that he couldn't ride bikes with me today or any other day. When I asked why, he said his parents didn't want him to play with me anymore. Why, I asked. Because my mom says your mom is bad. My mother was bad? I didn't understand what he meant or why he said such a hurtful thing, and his words left me bleeding from 100 little wounds. I held back tears as I raced home. I ran into the garage, sat on my bike and cried while trying to figure out why my friend's mother would have said such a mean thing about my mom. It didn't make sense. My mom was a sweet, shy young woman. She wasn't bad, and she didn't have the capability of being mean. She fought with my father.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?